Better late than never, huh? All right. Welcome back to Startup Conversations with Louisville Entrepreneurs. I usually try to put these things up on Tuesday, but I really had kind of a bear of a Tuesday and had a bear of a week for that matter. And then, of course, Wednesday, yesterday was July 4th, and I was busy working on my sunburn and trying to keep my children alive in a swimming pool. Success on all accounts. Anyhow, we're continuing our conversations with entrepreneurs by welcoming in Robin Davis Sakula. It's Robin with a Y on Twitter, who is a freelance writer, trained as a journalist, and has successfully jumped out of the corporate journalism world and into freelancing. And Lord knows, in the past several years, there are a lot of those people out there who have working for newspapers and magazines, and for one reason or another, have found themselves wondering what to do next. Well, she managed to navigate her life in such a way where she's making a very good living writing and doing some marketing and just hooking brands up with ways to reach more people. We talk a lot about the evolving nature of media and news itself and what the market might be like for journalism-oriented young writers who are coming out of school and dreaming of being, you know, Lois Lane or Perry White, or not really a superhero guy, but, you know, they're journalists. So it's a pretty interesting conversation, and we hope you enjoy it. I try to put this podcast up any so you can consume it any way you see fit. WordPress is awesome. I think everybody knows that. And we have a mobile theme enabled, so if you just hit it up on any smartphone, you ought to be able to listen to any of these podcasts and, of course, the other great shows on the PodCrunch network. You can also pick us up on the Stitcher app for Android and iPhone and Palm devices, because how many people have those things out there? Come on, Stitcher. Get on the Windows Phone app, man. Or, of course, we're naturally in the iTunes new podcast app, which is pretty exciting. Very difficult to find, though, if you go into the search mechanism and you search Startup Louisville, or you can search my name, Dan Vonderhyde, and you ought to be able to find us. And make sure you subscribe so we know you're out there. And by all means, leave comments if you like what you hear on the website at podcrunch.com. You're a writer.
Yes, I am.
Is that all you do?
No.
Other than spin class.
Yes. Yes, if you follow me on Twitter at ITS, Robin with a Y, that's R-O-B-Y-N with a Y. That's awfully long and complicated. But if you follow me on Twitter, you know that, yes, I go to spin class.
Right.
I talk about going to spin class more than I actually go.
Okay. Are you going to spinning? No, me
yeah,
either. Okay,
right, yeah.
Count that as your spin class
yeah,
person.
Yeah, right. That's, yes, I have a friend that I spin with, which is what he's referencing. But, yes, I write. I do marketing. I do a lot of things that are somewhat related to writing. It started with writing and
but
branched out.
Trained as a journalist.
That's right.
Right.
My training is as a journalist. The last place that I worked as a journalist was Business First. And when I had my first child in October of 2003, I went out on my own as a writer.
Okay. And since that time, really, since you started writing, which is you're in high school or something, you write for the student paper, and journalism was different back then.
Very different.
Way back in the olden days.
Yes. Yes.
And all of that has completely changed. Did the game change you, or did you kind of change along? Did you see this following the trends and are kind of going along with that wave? I mean, you have plenty of news
mm-hmm.
type of experience.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's just a different,
yes,
you know,
it's a different
business
world.
It's a different culture. I mean, is that something that you adapted to? I got my question kind of backwards, but
I understand. I understand what you question.
You?
Yes. My career evolved as I saw the industry evolving. And as clients would ask me, do you do X? And I would say, well, yes, I do video
yeah.
production. And I would go and
do
Google.
Do you do video production?
I have written scripts and okay. I have lined up people to be in videos because I understand the basics of what you're looking for as a journalist in terms of what you want on camera, what you want the person to sound like, and what you might want them to say. So then I connect with a professional video company that does all the hard work. Okay. I bring them a concept and sometimes a script.
And some direction.
And then I also line up all the people to be in the video, and then I give them ideas for B-roll. And also, of course, ask for their contributions, and they pull it all together. They have a lot more. That doesn't sound like they have much input in the creative side, but they usually do quite a bit.
Well, sure.
What I take them is pretty raw.
Yeah, I don't I have a little bit of PR. I have a PR minor from Ball State University.
I did not know that. Okay. So
I know how to format a press release really well.
That's great.
And then I know people who know how to get that press release out.
Yes.
Is the press? I mean, that's sort of a side question. Is there any room for the press release in 2012? The old school, you know, sort of for immediate release thing.
Yes, yes, there is. The role of the press release these days is to tip journalists off to a good story, or to simply present it in as full a fashion as possible, because it may very well be cut and pasted onto different sites, particularly online media, more so. I haven't found too many places that do a lot of cutting and pasting, but
I used to do it. At Louisville.com, I was a copy paste maniac.
Yes,
before you know, we actually found somebody that wrote things, and
it does happen. I am prepared. I'll put it this way: I write in such a way that I am prepared for that to happen.
Okay,
but
well, it's smart. I mean, it's different now.
Yes.
Yeah.
They don't have the time. Basically, my principle for public relations is to look at what reporters have a monster to feed. And do they have a blog? Do they have Twitter? Do they have what are they trying to fill? Do they have a column? And do they have enough monster food? So
monster
if you're a columnist and
down.
You're always looking for stories, then you're someone I'm going to approach probably first, because you have a duty to produce a certain number of days per week, and you're looking for a certain kind of story, and I can read your columns and get a sense for the kind of story you might like. I used to pitch to Dale Moss quite often in Southern Indiana, because it was very easy to see what Dale was looking for. Dale's now retired, unfortunately.
Hmm. Well, you said you're looking for a certain number. For us at Louisville.com, there were plenty of stories.
Right.
We just didn't have anybody to write them.
Exactly.
And we didn't necessarily have the money to go out and pay somebody.
Right.
Much less a staff of people to ferret this stuff out and research it. And is that the state of the game today? Is there too much conjecture out there, do you think? I mean.
Well, what I'm seeing is many more freelance options out there for writers from a positive perspective. If you look at Louisville.com now, they use a lot of an army of freelancers. And there's a lot of opportunities to create a voice and to do creative work on Louisville.com.
Sure.
A friend of mine, Pat Fawcett, who's a great columnist, wrote for Velocity. And when Velocity folded, I've seen his work on Louisville.com.
How many times is that going to come up in this conversation? When this folded, when this went under,
when they
fired all these people.
Right. And that's the real name of the game these days is understanding where people are going, following them if they've been useful and helpful to you, or understanding who's taking their place and how they want stuff. Because not every journalist wants the same stuff the same way.
Sure.
These days, it's pretty much ubiquitous. Everybody wants stuff by email. So when I send things, and everybody's got Word. 5 years ago, there were papers that I dealt with that didn't have Word. So you would send stuff in the body of an email. These days, I send stuff as a Word attachment and in the body of an email.
Now you got to clean out Word. You can't even use that stuff.
Yeah.
Completely remove the formatting.
Yeah. I make it as simple and easy for them as possible, and I will provide them with people. My greatest joy is when someone calls me and says, I want to do an interview with these people. I want to write my own story. Wonderful. Hmm. And my job is to make it as easy as humanly possible to make that interview happen.
And you started, you said 2003.
Right.
You got out of the corporate game or news, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And you went out on your own.
That's right.
Have you just figured out all of this since then? Or did you have an, just by necessity, you just first person through the wall and you're all bloodied and battered and, you know, and then you have this.
Yeah, for me, it's when I was in college, I did some freelancing for the New York Times. They had a campus correspondent program where they would ask you to write about your campus. For me, it expanded into my campus plus any others in Virginia where they didn't have somebody. So I did a wealth of stories for them over that time period, and then I started freelancing for others. And the thing I learned through that experience is you can have a good bit of freelance work if you obey the deadlines. Mm-hmm. You write well, or at least accurately. You can
and follow the fake AP guy.
Right. Yes. There's that too.
Don't pay attention to what the
right. Follow the rules. Yeah. Get stuff in on time and communicate well and often with your editor, but not too often. You want an email has made that a wonderful. That's a wonderful tool that has made what I do possible because I can send an editor. My favorite way to do with an assignment. Or with my clients now, because most of my work now is with corporate clients rather than publications.
Okay.
But my favorite thing to do now is to send someone an email saying, I've called this person and that person. I have a set up an appointment with the second person. The first person hasn't returned my call, but I want you to know I'm working on it and I should be able to meet the deadline. Or I'm running into a lot of problems. Bob Smith doesn't want to talk about that. Is there somebody else you could recommend for the story? You should not make substitutions of sources or any big changes without warning your editor or your client that that's what's coming.
You've managed to solve these problems out on your own. Are you surprised at the success that you've had? Like,
you know,
as a standalone person? And like,
yes.
That had to have been scary, right?
It was. When I first went out on my own, I was convinced that we would have to eat dog food or something crazy like
that. It's better than you think it is.
Well, if you get the kind that makes its own gravy.
The gravy, right.
Yeah,
you
right.
Just pour
it's
the water
not as bad.
Yeah.
When I went out on my own, my husband's greatest fear is that I would turn into a miserable, terrible B-word that he could not speak to because I was going to be alone all the time.
Right.
I'm quite social.
Okay.
So I told him, I said, give me 6 months. And if I'm truly miserable, you can tell me, and I promise I won't punch you anywhere particularly tender.
Oh, yeah, right.
So, and within 6 months, I had figured out that I actually did need childcare. I had this crazy myth in my head that
was
my
because
child
you were
could...
so busy after six
yes.
months. You're like, oh my gosh, this
yes.
is
yes, yes.
Oh, wow.
I was busier than I anticipated. Well, and the other thing was, I don't think I'd ever actually seen a live child.
Oh,
I didn't understand that you
right.
could not set a 5-month-old down with a set of blocks.
Yeah, right.
And they wouldn't. Play all day while I work.
Here's some scissors. Figure out how
yeah,
to use those.
It just didn't occur to me that. So I actually met someone in my pediatrician's office who said, oh, I do childcare and I just moved here. And she was a wonderful person. And we kind of eased our way in something like, you know, 2 half days a week and then 3 days. And so from there, once I had the childcare lined up, I felt like I could handle my business in a professional way. And then I could view myself as an entrepreneur who writes
40 hours a week. I mean, did you go into this thinking I got to do this 40 hours and I got to.
From the beginning, I really didn't understand that I really am a type A person.
Hmm.
And one of the things that happened along the way was I discovered that I really want to either work or not work. I don't want to do this half thing where I'm trying to work in the evenings to supplement the daytimes because I didn't get enough daytime work because the babysitter fell through. So a couple of years ago, well, 6 years ago now, when I found out I was pregnant with twins, I went the daycare route and just said, you know what? When everybody else is working during the week, during the day, I'm going to work.
Okay.
When everybody else is home, I'm going to just be with my family.
Have you been able to stick to that pretty well?
Yes.
I mean, so you're very regimented with
yes, I am.
Nine to fiver? Like
yes. This is my job.
Whatever it is.
Yes. This is my job. This is my work. This is what I do. It's like anybody else's job except that. I don't go to an office.
It's different because I didn't expect you to say that. I expect because a lot of people like to do freelance because of the flexibility it brings to their life.
Right.
And they can go off and they can do this or they can play golf and then I'll just catch up with that later. Of course, if you're meeting deadlines, that's kind of a different story. So that's surprising to me.
Well, it's the one wonderful bit of flexibility that I have with this that I really adore is that if a child is sick, that's when I have the flexibility.
Okay.
And God knows, those first couple of years, the twins, I mean, they were constantly sick.
I have three kids.
So,
it never stops.
So my goal was to be well ahead of deadline at all times so that at any point, if a child was sick, I could drop out for a day.
Okay.
I wanted
because they all get better after a day.
Well, you could drop out for a day and not have it ruin your life.
Okay.
A week is another thing, kind of.
Yeah, right. Okay.
But at least when they're sick, they nap. So.
Are you able to take full vacations? Like,
yes.
I am on vacation this week, and I will not answer emails and tweet.
It doesn't quite go that way.
Okay.
What I tended to do, for instance, when we went to Florida last year, I took my laptop with me. And when we were sitting at my in-laws and my kids were playing with their kids, I would just, I'd work for a little bit, set up some tweets in Hootsuite, respond to things on Facebook, and then put it away.
You schedule tweets. That's so inorganic.
I do. But I do that mainly for things that are, we know we're going to have a particular special on a particular night for this client, so we're going to tweet about that or an event.
You're tweeting on behalf of other people.
Right.
You're not, okay, I'm thinking
not for myself.
Okay.
Nobody really cares about anything I could schedule, really.
Well, I don't know about that.
I mean, really. And then
you got to publish your social calendar. You're a social person.
Yes, well,
got to make the scene.
Yeah. But what I tend to do is I'll schedule that kind of, hey, we're having this event on this day kinds of things.
Okay.
And then I go in and interact with people and respond to tweets and do what I need to do.
That's the tough thing is because it never stops.
That's true.
It just never turns off. When I was in high school and I worked at the radio station, it was on all the time. And that was the hardest thing for me to wrap my brain around is that people need this all the time. And it's all – there's no vacation.
Mm-hmm.
You can take a vacation, but somebody has to be there to take your place. It's not like –
I'm not comfortable, though, cutting off entirely. And you know what I think? I think it's generational. I think that my generation does not really ever expect to be untethered. I think that when we're at Disney World with our iPhone, we expect to be connected to clients and we'll take calls. And we're okay with that.
Hmm.
And I think...
I'm a type B personality. I tend to disagree with you.
I'm a type A. But I'm okay with that because that affords me the flexibility to go to Disney World with my family.
Yeah.
And I also tell clients when I take them on, you need to understand something. I'm cheaper than an agency. And I'm very responsive and I don't miss deadlines. And if you need me, I'm there.
You're there. Yeah.
But you need to understand I'm not an agency. So if I, I'm laid up with a broken – well, chances are if I'm laid up with a broken leg, I'm going to work a lot more. I'm going to work a lot more. But if there's an emergency with my children, I'm a lady with three kids.
Yeah.
And so that is going to be a reality for me. But you need to understand, I stay well ahead of deadlines. You probably won't ever have an issue, but I want you to understand that going in. Because I really don't want people who are going to be incredibly demanding. I always want to come in above what the client expects, but I don't want the bar to be set so high that one person cannot achieve.
Can't do it, right?
Right.
Yeah, you got to have backup. It's
absolutely.
Is there a market for other people to do that?
Like yes.
I have things written down to ask, and sometimes I ask a lot more, and sometimes I'm like, this is the dumbest question. But, is there room for other people to do this? Coming out of school, because we have mentioned the game has changed so much, what advice do you have to somebody who's like, I'm going to be a hard-hitting journalist. I want to be a writer. I want to, they have these words in them that they need to get out somehow, some way, but they also need to make a living.
Right.
So what advice might you offer somebody who, it's by the time this comes out, it'll probably be July, but, we have a whole new year of graduates who want to do something.
My recommendation for anyone coming out of school, almost in any field, is to go to work for someone else.
Don't do it.
Do it for a while.
Oh, okay.
Make your mistakes on somebody else's dime. Because if you make mistakes with a client, you're going to pay for it with that money they're paying you.
And
they're going to walk.
Yeah, it'll be hard for them to find clients. I mean, you have to have a network.
I think that the best thing you can do is to take a job for somewhere – and you're not going to get your choice. You may have to do something that isn't great, but it pays the bills for a while. You learn a lot, and you don't have to do it forever.
Yeah.
Coming out of school, my first job was at a newspaper in Virginia, and I was the general assignment reporter / health and science, and it was a terrible combination. I was working in Charlottesville, Virginia, which is where the University of Virginia is. So they have a huge medical facility.
Dave Matthews was there.
Dave Matthews was
like
there.
A bar band,
he used to play a club there every Tuesday night. for $5. And we would say, you want to go see Dave Matthews tonight? Yeah, nah. I don't know. Every Tuesday. And when he went up to $10, we thought he was getting big for his britches.
Yeah. Dave Matthews is a little heady for us.
Yes.
He's not leaving any room for beer money.
So for me, managing the general assignment portion of the job, along with the job I wanted to do as a health sciences reporter, was almost impossible. I would have an interview set up with a neurosurgeon that it took me, you know, a month to get in with. And they'd say, well, sorry, we need you to go cover this, you know, congressman visiting with no preparation. And it was really hard. We didn't have cell phones. So, you know, it was
really tough. Different.
Yeah. But then the next job I had, I worked for a small daily and it was an afternoon paper. So that meant we published at 11:30 in the morning. You get in at 7. I was a police reporter, so I would go to the county sheriff's office, and I'd go to the police department, and I would pick up stuff. And I had very little time to write. But as it turns out, thinking on my feet has been the greatest skill I ever could have learned.
Oh, you take something from everything, don't you?
Well, that's what I think.
That's a common theme throughout these conversations I have, is that everything leading up to whatever point, jumping off point, there's been a series of occurrences and experiences that have led somebody to the decision to do what they want to do.
Right. Because I really believe that for freelance writers in particular, it's not really the ability to write exceptionally well. You know, Hunter S. Thompson was an amazing writer, but God, don't you think he would have been an awful employee? I mean, the guy disappears, he goes on benders, he may produce, he may hit deadline, he may not. You're going to act like that and be a freelancer, you're going to starve.
Yeah.
You are not Hunter S. Thompson.
I was going to say he wasn't a journalist. That's crazy. But
it's a difference of opinion.
He invented his own, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
So he was more of an artist.
Yes.
Artist slash, you know, it's, I don't know.
But the
There's a fine line
there. The average person coming out of school needs to understand you're not an artist. You're not Hemingway. And you need to learn everything you can. I'm seeing sometimes with folks coming straight out of school that they think they know more than they do. And you know what? I probably thought the same thing when I was 21.
I just turned 40. I think that about all the young people. They think they know everything. I sound like
I know. We all sound ancient. I'm 40 myself, so I'm right there with you. But but the thing I would tell you is there's people who have things to teach you that – you know, one of the banes of our existence coming out of school was to go work for some tiny rural paper. Well, you know what? Some of those people are really good at what they do.
And I got to tell you, I mean, those papers are thriving at this point.
They are thriving.
In those small communities, Warren Buffett just bought a ton of – he bought like 60, 80, whatever number was, newspapers in these small towns, because that's all those small towns have.
Right.
And so there's a – you know, it's oddly – there's a – future in local journalism in a small town.
There is.
And in a big city like this, you know, we're kind of trying to figure that out.
Well, and journalism in Louisville, I think, is turning into something that looks a lot different than we might have expected. It's much more fractured, and that's what makes doing public relations these days a lot harder. But it also makes it more interesting, because I pitch to blogs these days. I occasionally will send stuff to Louisville, to Melissa, and I'm going to get her name wrong. I don't remember if it's
Louisville.
Chipman.
It's fine.
Louisville, it's either Chipman or Chapman. And I apologize, Melissa. We're having lunch this week, and I should know better. But
anyway,
I know. She'll have to rub it in. But and I've sent things to Michelle Jones, who does a wonderful job on consuming Louisville with local restaurants.
Down Megabytes, right?
Yes. And I pitched to her, and I've gotten some Eddie Merlot's things on there. So when you're pitching these days, you may be pitching to a Twitter account. You may be pitching to a freelancer. I've pitched some travel stories to Zach. So, you know, I can. I'm. What my job is these days is to find out what an individual writer or reporter or editor's thought is. What kinds of stories do they respond to? And the fact that I've worked at these organizations and I've freelanced for a lot of people, I know how they think and what their personal interests are, and it makes it easier to pitch to them. There are certain things that I'm not going to send to Consuming Louisville because I read it and understand it. She's not going to be interested in chain restaurants. That's just not something she's going to write about.
Right.
And that's okay. That's her brand. That's her right. But there is somebody who will. And it's a matter of knowing all these audiences.
Niche. I mean, that's another common theme.
Yes.
You know, everybody's a specialist on something. I'm trying to be a specialist here, so to speak.
Right.
You know, and develop a very specific audience. And And maybe I somebody think, will pitch me a story someday.
Yes. Well, and I think if somebody wants to pitch you a guest for a podcast, that would be a great PR
email
pitch
me,
to make.
Email me, startup@podcrunch.com. There's the plug.
Yes. And I see, and I think that for a client of mine who is an entrepreneur and wants to talk about building a great business, that would be something. Because sometimes what you may, maybe you're not trying, maybe you want to sell yourself as an expert in a particular area. Because sometimes building that brand, I have a group of attorneys I work with, and what they really want to do is to speak and to build their brand as experts in helping businesses grow, helping businesses solve problems. So what I'm looking to for them to do for them is to get them sponsorships for events that will put them in front of their core audience. It may be a very small group, but it's very selective. And I may also be looking to pitch them as speakers for conferences. And so that's a very different PR pitch. A traditional media pitch for them really won't do a heck of a lot of good. There's a lot of law firms. There's a lot of attorneys. How are you going to differentiate yourselves
right
from the others?
Well, and proliferation of bloggers and niche publications and it's opinion-based, right, whatever you want to call it, and there's a ton of people doing it.
Right.
Has that increased or decreased the demand for solid writing? Because there's a lot of writing out there, and the general populace may be becoming desensitized as to what's good and what's bad. I mean, look at
right.
You know, any of the cable news networks, I have to use the term news very loosely.
Right.
Because it's just, you know, people spewing out opinion.
Right.
And it drives me crazy. I can't watch any of it anymore. I'm rewatching Lost on
yes.
my tablet because it's as far away from reality as I can get.
Right.
Smoke monster.
Right.
Is this something that like people are like clamoring for your talent level, or is it they're like, you know, I can get somebody else to write because it's less expensive?
Well, what I see my job as is to get to know the client, figure out their voice and how they want to say something, and echo it. So when I talk to someone about doing some writing for them, I'm gonna ask them a little bit about what is it you want people to know that they don't. And then talk them through that and then say, okay, what publication is your ideal? What would you love to get in? I cannot get you on the cover of Time, so pick something else.
Oh, you can't?
Yeah.
I can do that.
You can just leave now. But, yeah, I have – and I want – that's the other check is to make sure their expectations are reasonable. I'm really not someone who can do national PR. I'm not at that level.
Okay.
You need an agency.
Yeah.
But I could probably help you get in local publications by hearing out your story and seeing what you want.
And does that differentiate you from somebody else who might be pitching on this particular piece of business because they're like, look, I can write you a press release for $25.
Right.
Or I mean, is that the competition, so to speak?
I don't really think so. It seems that when someone comes to me, for the most part, they're coming through a recommendation.
Okay.
So when they come to me, it's because they've got a particular problem that they think I can solve. Not
right.
just anyone, but, you know, how could you do this for me and can I afford it?
Okay.
So I readily talk with clients about prices because I want them to have that information up front. Because some people aren't accustomed to hiring a professional writer or public relations consultant and don't understand what it costs. So I want to be sure that we're on the same page because I don't want to waste their time.
So is it 100% of your business? Is that all coming from referral and reputational sort of?
A good bit of it.
Okay.
I have a website. It works very well for what I want it for, but very few, if any, occasions has someone Googled freelance writer Louisville and come to my site and hired me from it.
Okay.
For the most part, my business does come from referrals. It comes from, you know, a new client that I'm probably about to sign a contract with is someone I go to church with who, hey, what exactly do you do anyway? And we talked it through and
I party.
Yeah. I tweet.
That's right.
I go to spin class. I tweet.
Professional tweeter.
Yeah. So
if only.
Yeah. So I talk them through, you know, these are the price packages for what I do on Twitter and Facebook is different than the price package for public relations because Twitter and Facebook is not really hourly. it's a monitoring
project-based sort of
right. You thing. Jump on, you respond to a few things, you jump off, you monitor it to make sure nobody says anything crazy.
Well, here's I jotted this down, and you just kind of walked into it, and you because you do this for a living, you might be a little biased, but the common belief is that brands now are publishers, and that becomes mm-hmm. part of their marketing strategy. Should they not do it? If they're not willing to invest the time and planning it and the people to help, are they just going to completely miss out if they don't seriously consider this?
I think that as a brand, you should do whatever you do really well, whatever it is. So if you're going to do social media, do it great. Respond to everybody.
And don't just think like, I got to do this because it's what I'm supposed to be doing.
Right. It may make sense for you to be on Facebook.
And it's
Facebook.
Free, right?
Well, it is. If you're doing it internally, if you love social media and if you're doing a good job, then yes. But it does take your time.
That's what I mean. It's the common misconception that it's free. No, not at all.
No. It's an expensive investment of your most precious resource, which is your time.
Time, sure.
But
or somebody else's time.
Right. Yeah. Well, for instance, one of the people that I talked to about doing social media work for is a man named Todd Ants, and he has Keg Liquors, two businesses in New Albany and Clarksville.
Fun client.
He is just an outstanding human being. I just really enjoyed talking to him. Well, I talked to him, and he said, well, I think I've pretty well got Facebook handled. He told me about what he was doing on Facebook, and I said, well, if I were you, I'd consider doing X, Y, and Z. Oh, okay, that's a good idea. And then I said, you know, on Twitter, you really ought to be out there tweeting, because I've seen liquor stores on Twitter, and there's nothing people like to talk about more than alcohol.
Right.
And they will be all over it, and you really ought to get on there and tweet, or you just hire me to do that part of it. I can come to, you know, when you have a tasting, I can come. I can take some pictures. I can tweet them. You can have them on Facebook. I can
have some tastes.
Yeah. You tell me what you want to promote, and we promote that on Twitter. If there's any new things you have coming in, you just need to communicate with me.
Yeah.
Well, he's decided to do it on his own, and he does a great job.
Well, you just gave him advice on what to do.
Right.
So.
Right.
Which is okay, you know.
That's okay. To me, free advice once is part of the part of what I do in terms of meeting with someone. I would not want it to be a 3-hour meeting in which I.
They're like, know, thanks, but no thanks.
Yes. And then, yeah, I don't want to give them every secret. But a few suggestions like that for a fellow business owner, I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
Because he could turn into a client, or he could refer me to someone else. Hey, I thought Robin was really smart. I figured out how to do this on my own. But, Bob, you might really like to talk to her.
It's such a tough thing to get people to – and we have clients here like, oh, man, we really need help with Facebook. Like, why are you on Facebook? I mean, that's the first question. Why are you even doing it?
Right. What do you want to get out of it?
They can't – sometimes they can't even answer it.
No.
And they're like, well, it's free.
Yeah, you know, it's free is not a good reason.
No, it's not at all.
And what I have told people, for instance, my law firm client is one. It's English Lucas Priest and Ousling Bowling Green. And the way I've explained to them is, look, you're probably not going to hire a lawyer based on a post you see on Facebook. But it's going to remind people that you're there. It's going to reinforce the fact that you're part of the community. And the greatest story they have to tell is how incredibly involved they are in the community. Their attorneys sit on an extensive list of boards. They volunteer lots of time. As an organization, they raise money for Relay for Life. They donate to all kinds of causes. But that story wasn't being told. And I said, that's what Facebook and Twitter are for you. It is to connect you with the community. It is to take that money that you're spending helping these organizations and making sure that people know about it. The other thing that I've used to explain the cost of marketing to them is this. Your attorneys, you're better educated than I am. You're incredibly smart. You can write. It's what you do for a living.
Sure.
But
they write in very great detail and very long documents
they
that
do.
Nobody can understand.
But, well, some of them actually, there's one particular attorney who she wrote most of the copy for their first website. It actually was pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
I used a good bit of it.
She's got a right brain.
She
right half of her brain,
she's
too.
She's really good. Yeah. But what I tell them is, you know, what you charge per hour, let's say you charge $300, $400, $500 an hour for your best attorneys. I don't know what they charge. But let's say it's for a
that's
typical
good.
Law firm. Yes.
I don't know what they charge either.
Yes.
Good for us.
Yes. So I charge between $75 and $85 an hour. So think of it this way. I can do it in probably half the time and at less than half the cost.
Sure.
So the time that you're saving is time that you can bill.
Right.
You will make money if you just let me do this part of it, and then it's handled.
Yeah.
I'll get it done faster, and I'll get it done cheaper.
Yeah.
This is costing you too much. If your attorneys are spending an hour on this, that could buy you hours and hours of my time.
That's cool. That's a cool way to look at it. And it's weird to think that you sit in front of people and you spend time selling this sort of thing. But you do. I mean, it's a business.
You
got to sell it. I mean,
you have to justify it. And you have to be expected that you're going to be asked to justify it.
How much time do you spend? Let me rephrase that. What percentage of your time is spent selling, and what percentage is spent producing, and what percentage is spent running the business and doing all the, you know, back office stuff?
Right.
Billing and whatnot.
Because of what I do with social media, a good bit of what I do is social media now, and I don't really necessarily keep track of that time by client. There are for Elpo, the law firm, I reserve an entire day for them. Every Tuesday is their day.
Okay.
And then if I run into something like this that I need to do, I schedule a couple of hours on another day. So it's blocked out. That is your time. They can call me anytime they want. They're my largest client. I don't care when you call me. Fine. But you know every Tuesday I'm available. So that works out very well. So then beyond that, usually on Friday afternoons, I spend my time invoicing, checking to make sure checks have come through. I try to have a couple of networking lunches a week, maybe not that much. I'm also very involved in Society of Professional Journalists.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those are things I'm doing to build my reputation in my career. I do public speaking, anything that I'm asked to do along those lines. But I really am a big believer in networking because that's how I got most of my business. That's how the law firm came to
me.
Is a friend
of
a friend.
Well, yeah, you said referral, yeah.
Referral is the name of the game, I think, for anyone. I started working for the Community Foundation of Southern Indiana. Oh, gosh, it's been 8 years ago. Their board chair was the chancellor of Ivy Tech. She hired me to do some work for Ivy Tech. Someone who was – and then she was also involved in One Southern Indiana, who hired me to do some things. Then I did a little bit of work, not a whole lot, for Carrie Stemler, who runs a business over there. So it was just one thing – and then Ivy Tech has an ad agency, the Asher Agency in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and they hired me to do some work.
Sure.
And then another Ivy Tech campus hired me to do some work. So these things kind of come around. And this is another reason I don't burn my bridges. I stepped away from the Community Foundation for about 2 years when they wanted to do some things, and I had another big client come in. And now I'm working for them again. My schedule allowed, and they decided they wanted to have me back, and I'm just doing some projects kind of here and there. So I'm glad I didn't burn that bridge.
Do you subscribe to the newspaper?
I do.
Do you read it?
I read the newspaper and I subscribe. I subscribe to the Tribune and I subscribe to the Courier Journal and a number of magazines.
But obviously their business is changing. We've established that.
Yes.
And it's sort of a flowing process of reinventing itself. As somebody who worked in the business, who is now doing a very, you know, healthy business on the side, writing for people, while watching your peers have their careers altered by the changing news journalism business, what advice would you give to newspaper publishers, to, as somebody on the outside looking in, like, this is what I see your business turning into?
Well, I think now it's all about mobile. The majority of us read and want our news on mobile, and it's not about posting links on Twitter. It's about creating an app, and I will pay good money. I would pay a monthly rate for a good app on my iPhone that gives me news, and I can prioritize it. I want Indiana news first. I want business news second. Maybe I want sports third.
Putting out the type of news that people still care about? Like, I don't subscribe to the paper, and I probably miss a few things here and there. But by and large, my life is not altered because I'm not reading the daily newspaper.
See, and for me, it is. I enjoy reading it. I like getting the news that way, but I want it mobile. I don't have a tablet. If I did, that's how I would want it.
Yeah,
I can guarantee
cool.
you. I can guarantee you that's how I'll be picking it up. And I feel like the newspaper industry has been chasing the trend for far too long.
Mm-hmm.
and we really should be leading. We've got a lot of smart people in this business, and we're either not listening to them or we're letting them leave the business. And I'm being asked by more and more people and who are in traditional journalism about freelancing and how they can make a living at that. And what I always tell them is you can make a great living at this. You can do a lot of things. You can think really well and on your feet. And, you know, as a journalist, you can transition to something else. But gosh, I really wish we could keep those people in the business. But to me, the problems are on the selling side and the advertising side. Many times you see advertising staffs who don't read their own paper. And you can sometimes say that of the reporters and the editorial staff as well.
Yeah.
But especially on the advertising side, I've been pitched things by sales reps who don't have any idea what my organization does. Or why that's a terrible ad choice for that client. They really do not have a sophisticated, they don't have a sophisticated understanding of the community. For the most part, and this may not be true of the Courier Journal, but some of the other papers that I've dealt with, more rural ones, the ad sales side, they may have a lot of graphic design experience, but it doesn't seem like they have a good understanding of the news and the community and how the two interact. And I wish that the sales staffs had more time for training. I wish they were better equipped. Many times, 10 years ago, a paper I worked at, none of the sales staff had computers. I couldn't even imagine that. You're going to pitch to a client and you're not going to Google them before you go?
Yeah.
I
10 years ago here, I'm trying, I guess it was 96. I was working at a radio group in Fort Myers, and we had one computer for the whole place.
Right.
I was like, oh, my gosh.
That kind of thing.
The internet was brand new. It still had that new car smell on it in 1996. So.
Right, absolutely.
It was a little different, but still.
I really think there's a lack of investment in the industry. I see some glimmers of hope every now and then. The Courier Journal just bought all of the employees' iPhones and are asking them to, well, all of the reporting staff, iPhones and are asking them to shoot video and photos with the iPhones, which is a great idea.
Sure.
I hope that they're being provided the training that they would need to really use them effectively.
To shoot something that's worthy of having, you know, hopefully they have a guy back at the ranch who's ready to edit it.
Right.
And we have radio stations here.
Right.
And I have, since the day I sat down, I said, look, we are not in the radio business anymore. We're in the media. And they changed the name of the company, and I think everybody's cool with that. But we are in the video, you know, we're competing with the TV stations too because we are trying to attract eyeballs to our different platform where we can put media, whether it's Facebook or our websites or whatever it is. So I guess my question, I'm looking at the, you know, recent news of layoffs here and like in our industry, broadcasting is just as guilty as them as the print industry of getting rid of the people who are creating a quality product.
Right.
And that's where I'm thinking, you know, we need to reinvest in the product itself to make sure that's like I said, my life is not altered because I'm missing. There were days when people could not go a day without reading the newspaper because there was something that was critical to life in their city being produced. And maybe I'm just biased, but I've become this opinion spewer that
I think you're right. It's not become vital reading anymore. And the question is, how do we make that happen? How do we make people want to read it? And I think it all comes down to availability and accessibility. Hmm. People really do not want to physically walk out of their house and pick up something out of their driveway.
Lazy, man.
It is lazy, and we can bemoan them or we can give them what they want. Where they want it.
Well, that's true.
I mean, if you're a business who is fighting against giving people what they want, where they want it, your days are numbered.
Yeah, that's true.
You really, people want it on that phone. And I think until we get really good at giving them that, it's going to be a tough sell.
That's why the fast food industry is doing so well, because people want cheap, tasty, I don't care if it's unhealthy.
Right.
You know, but it's on demand. I mean, that's the buzz thing.
Right.
Drive through, give me my Mac, I'm on my way. I know it's bad for me.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying tablets are bad for people. I'm getting off topic here.
Well, but the comparison is valid until you get to the part about being cheap and easy, because I think the iPhone users are a fairly sophisticated lot, And I think
Windows Phones users are. I know that much.
I've heard that. There's only like two, though.
I know. We're the smartest people in town,
I've
the two
that.
Of us.
Yeah, I've heard that. But I think that for the most part, they're a sophisticated lot, and they would read something that's compelling stuff. I could see it happen, particularly if they're reading it on a tablet. People will take the time to read something that really tells them something they need to know. And I hate the idea that we're cutting those people who are creating that content that is so readable and so interesting.
Well, this kind of feeds into – are you a Gary Vaynerchuk person? Do you know?
No.
Okay. Well, he wrote this book called Crush It, and I love Crush It. Shout out to Gary V. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, he mentioned in the book, he says, I don't know what's stopping all of these journalists who are getting fired from pulling together – and everybody takes 10% of the company, and they put out a kick-ass daily or weekly or however often they publish news product on a digital platform and just gives the newspaper a run for their money. Like, what's stopping? Is it the lack of entrepreneurial drive in people?
I think it's part of that, but you also have to understand.
The barrier to entry is so low, though. I mean, with the digital.
True, it's but just, they don't have any money.
You don't need any money to have a website. You need $75 a
but
year or something.
You need somebody to sell it, and you need somebody to program it. And for the most part, the folks that are being let go out of the industry are not programmers, and they're not people who know how to necessarily sell. That's one of the barriers sometimes
selling,
to freelancing.
I get the sales part of it because that's kind of where I live here. But
yeah.
You got to have a product before you can sell it. So, you know, I'm just thinking my own thoughts here. Set a diet like you did. Give me 6 months. Let me see if this works. Come on, guys. There's 10 of us. We can you do sports. You do local. You do business. You know, whatever they're passionate about. And you have a staff of 10 awesome writers cranking out awesome product every single day. And then after 6 months, you're like, you know what? Look. I think we can find somebody to sell this, and we'll pay them on it, however you do it. I see your point, but that just seems like such a small barrier to entry to me. Like,
the thing is, though, that writing is sometimes a very small and narrow skill set that does not necessarily include the other elements that you would need to put together to form that. Plus, a lot of journalists, you have to remember, they're not making very much money. So when they get let go out of that job, sometimes they're not giving very much severance at all.
Yeah.
So they have very little time to go out and start earning money again to feed their families.
Sure.
So that's why many times they'll go into, say, a salaried job, because they need the benefits, they need the money. They're not in the
– If there's a salary job to be had. That's,
yes, if there is a salary job to be had. Now, sometimes I've met with a lot of folks that talk to them about freelancing. And the journalists who are already positioned on Facebook and are already positioned on Twitter and understand how to write a blog and are not afraid of the internet are the ones who are going to succeed as freelancers.
They're probably the ones who still have a job.
Well, you know? On some occasion, that's true. But in some cases – They may not want to be working for someone else.
Yeah.
If you've got a quite a bit of experience and you want to go out there on your own, chances are pretty good that you can parlay that experience into something.
Huh.
And I see that. And the one thing though that journalists can't be scared of is selling themselves. One of the psychology things I've noticed about journalism is that it's a profession in which there's not a lot of praise. You do a lot of great work. And in the corporate world, when you do something amazing, you have a party.
Yeah.
You pop the champagne.
Right.
You hit your sales goal. You got a bonus. You got a car. Something. When you've done something amazing, you celebrate. In journalism, you put that story to bed. You go home. You get up the next day, and your editor wants to know, okay, what do you got for me
What's
now?
Next?
What's
right.
next?
And you hope you win a Peabody.
Right. And which comes with, you know.
And nobody watches the Peabody Awards
right.
on TV.
But it's a lovely award. But even the Pulitzer comes with, you know, a small, relatively small cash prize.
Yeah.
So the accomplishments in journalism are not celebrated as they should be. So people come out of the industry kind of beaten down.
Hmm.
They don't sometimes think very well of themselves. So sometimes when I'm doing a freelance seminar, what I'm telling people is, you're good enough,
you're smart enough,
and by golly, you can do this.
The lesson here is, give a journalist a hug.
Right. Yes.
That's the takeaway from this whole conversation.
Yes. Well,
it's great.
It's, yeah. I did this. It was to Mrs. Rogers. Pardon me.
That's great.
But I'm really the last person to dump on the profession because I spend a lot of time with people who are incredibly bright, doing great work, putting up with the most ridiculous phone calls you can ever imagine. And when it comes time for a review, they're told, well, you're getting a cut. And, you know, since you didn't win a Pulitzer this year, we can only give you, you know, an average rating.
Huh.
You know, I've actually worked in journalism jobs where I was told to give people lower than good reviews so that they didn't have to give them much of a raise.
Man.
That really sickens me, and it sickened me to do it.
Yeah. People are gross.
Well, you know, and a lot of the journalists I know, they're super bright. If you can think on your feet, whether you're a photographer or a writer or a graphic designer, you can think on your feet, you can make quick decisions, you can do your craft quickly. You just have to learn that other piece, which is the networking, which a lot of journalists, you know, can't stand, and you have to learn to promote yourself, and you have to learn that it's okay to promote yourself, and you can find
a brand.
A way.
You can be a brand unto yourself.
Yes, I have several friends in journalism.
Bob Hill's a brand. Dale Moss was a brand.
Yes, and one of the things I've liked about Bob is, you know, he has that end page column in Louisville Magazine, and he had a whole other identity, which was his nursery business, and he's, you know, has a radio show. Or has had. I'm not sure if it's still on the air, homegrown. So he's got a whole other life, really,
sure,
outside of journalism, which I thought was that's a very nice way to have things. And I like that side of it. I would love to see more journalists develop kind of a side personality or some side freelance business. There's a friend of mine who works at the Lexington Herald Leader, who's a great guy, and I talked to him for a long time about freelance writing. But he writes all day long, every day. So he's doing freelance photography. And that is a whole other creative side. He loves it. He's getting great jobs. He's quite happy
filling
to have
his tank.
Yeah. So sometimes maybe look at something else other than what you do all day long.
So you've become a brand, and we find you on Twitter at what?
Well, it's a little bit complicated, but ITSROBYN.
With a Y.
With a Y.
Okay. Where else? What's your website or your blog?
My website is my name, which is robindavissekula.com. Oh. My last name is spelled S-E-K-U-L-A.
Very good.
And beyond that, you can find me on Facebook, and you can email me at robin@robinrobynds.com. And that's because Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, was taken by the singer.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, it was. It's a damn shame. But
well, thank you.
Thank you.
Interesting. Now go give a journalist a hug.
That's right.